story anyway, some ISKCON character here. I'm just looking at my own history and how we used to do things, me and others. You're a preacher, so you find yourself mainly giving lectures or preaching, speaking the philosophy. And it can kind of become a bit that I'm saying the same things over and over again. So you learn much by sharing with, learning from, you know, God brothers and so on. Other preachers. Little tricks, cool ways to express it. Little stories, little examples. Little metaphors. I mean, I think we even used to talk about it like this. Because I was one of those preachers. You know, you need to decorate a little. Make a little entertainment of it. Then the preaching, you know, the medicine goes down with a little sugar on top. So it's kind of a technique. And then the the one who is best at doing this, which, I mean, you could say, in the most banal level, was when everyone laughs and thinks he is really fun. And they like to listen to your lectures because the ordinary residents of the temple, I'm talking about 80s, 90s, I don't know how it is now. We also, of course, all of us, well, except maybe when you got big, but we ordinary ones have it, had it as our duty to listen to those lectures. So you, of course, prefer when they are fun and entertaining and with cool examples, and otherwise you fall asleep. And it wasn't a nice experience to give a lecture when you saw everyone starting to fall asleep, because then you knew you had failed. So anyway, life of a preacher back then. But what I am saying today, now this is the old Pio maybe talking here in the story, if we can get it in there somewhere, or some other character. Now, at this ripe age, may give the youngsters, well, share my experiences, but what I've learned from it, that it can become uh, a preaching priest job. Speaking a philosophy you have learned with the Sanskrit verses you have memorized, throwing in the little interesting decorations here and there, and then you've done your job. And what is a job? It is to present the philosophy, the teachings that you have learned in the Vedic scriptures, whatever, the Bhagavad scriptures and from the Bhagavad Acharyas and all of that. And you're good at presenting it. Now, that is how to say, not necessarily a person who has understood and realized those teachings, who has walked and is walking that path of bhakti out there or in there. I mean, really living that knowledge. Vidyavadu jivanam, like Lord Chaitanya said. But that's what it's about. So sometimes a person who is nothing big, no fine title or dress or anything, maybe who has been struggling quietly for her or himself through a lifetime, may walk around there starting to mumble about as Krishna is here and there and everywhere, and it's just wow. And some may think he or she's crazy, a little weird, but maybe others will say, ooh, of course. This makes sense, that way of looking at the world. It's all about the presence of God everywhere. God is in God. And we live in that presence. Everything else sinks into the background. Or the illusions sink into the background, the fantasies, the dreams, and the reality here. Surfaces come shining like the sun, dissipating all the fog. So in other words, the lesson here, the conclusion, the moral of the story, well, First of all, let's not judge each other. Let's not think we are better than others because we are receiving respect or fame or position or title, whatever, whether it's academic or spiritual or whatever, social. And because we learned all the fine ways of speaking and so on. But that we should simply pray. Somewhere there constantly, if possible, deep there in our heart, to Goddess and God, to Radha Krishna, to Lord Nitya, the Guru Dev, and the devotees. That I'm yours, just use me. Please. I am completely dependent on you. And be there and not forget our conversations with God. Daily, and that's the very meaning of sadhana, really. Not just some physical activity or mental exercise. But those are meant to bring us into the presence of God, Goddess and God. And when we start our day like that, maybe asking, what shall I do today? Or at the end of the day, did I do okay today? Or was I not a good tool for you, instrument? If not, then please, begging for your mercy that I can become. A good servant of yours in this world, because that's why I'm here. And if not, then, well, I don't have to do anything because I'm just so happy and satisfied sitting here talking with you, being in your presence. And quietly just being here. And maybe you will talk to me or show me something. Give me something or take away something. And whatever it is, it's just... Whew. Wonderful adventure. So anyway, I mean... Yes, that's what I mean, but... This is where it's at. And I think what I'm getting at here is that what I was against in religion when I was young is the same thing that I'm against now when it comes to religion. In those days, I stopped believing in God because I didn't like religion, but then I realized, hey, just because this priest is stupid doesn't mean God doesn't exist. It doesn't make sense. So, but what I mean is, it so easily happens that our dynamic spiritual bhakti path, the Saranagati path, which is a personal path, sometimes through what seems like a big dark forest, but where the light then of dawn starts to show the way. I mean, this is what I, isn't it? This is what this path of bhakti, path of self-realization, the spiritual path is about. But then it tends to turn into religions, institutions, doctrines, dogmas. And I saw definitely, because many, quite many, I think, of the American Hare Krishna devotees back then were Jews. And there I think they had this kind of, you know, the book, big serious guys there with the books, 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 and knowledge and teachings and just... a special kind of attitude, or I would say form of religion. And then you have the Christian version of it, you know, with the priests and the, well, Catholic, Protestant, you know, they, we can analyze the professionals, the ones sitting there upholding the institution of the church or of the, or whatever, the temple or the synagogue. But then we learned, and I think that's what made us attracted to the Krishna consciousness movement, that in the Asian tradition you find something, I mean, you find this there also, but you find something different. An individualistic path. Me and God, and yeah, we together also, but you know, here I am. And this yoga and this meditation and this bhakti, it's about something in me, my heart, my consciousness, and God here, and the, my fellows, people. But it's, you know, something for us that we, knowledge for us that we can use and live, and that makes us happy and strong and functioning very nicely and friendly together. That's what it is. But then some, to say, take it up as a job. Someone has to be the priest, someone has to be the pope, someone has to be the, because this religious institution now, with the congregations, you know, the people, the herd that we are chosen to protect and lead, has to be taken care of. So I would say that I saw this kind of, we can analyze different kind of influences from different Western religions and societies. I mean, we talked today about the American mentality of good, great devotees and small devotees. You know how we are. Someday we don't have that in Sweden so much, but you know, you must be big or small, winner or loser, that kind of mental. So these things slip in, and I just wanted to show that somewhere here, you know, in our story by characters that can. Now I gave a lecture here, but build it into some characters who you can, everyone who looks at the story or listens or whatever can understand and learn that, yeah, that's how it works. So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, because those eternal teachings, which the Bhakti teachings are, like the Gita and so on, they are what remain after the religions come and go and you accept or reject, or you, this group or that group coming and going. So this religious institutions and so on, they come and they go, because I would say that they are material constructions that just tend to emerge by the, how to say, material influences or what is it? The anartas and all that. That are there, not in that one is maintaining habits from previous, you know, not just doing exactly everything perfectly with the new, this high standard of spiritual whatever, and address, and the way you brush your teeth and go to the toilet, and you know, all those things. but really, the material contaminations, if we should use that word, of tending to look at this material world out there as the reality. And maybe also, maybe that's even more relevant here, that those who are by their nature, because some are like that, more of leaders, controllers, who has this desire, which is a material desire, to be big leaders, control, and you know, getting others to follow and being the best, and you know, that, those kind of people. When they are the teachers, when they are the ultimate ones in charge, also supplying the knowledge, but that mentality has crept into the minds of teachers, or such people are taking the role of teachers, then you you know, then what happens is that the institution appears, the bureaucracy, the pyramid, you know, with that certain power person there somehow or other on top. Then you have these other people who are greedy for money. They just, want money. Can't help it. When that mentality also creeps in, these different things. And I don't know, I mean, maybe... I just remember... No, I'm just sitting here talking. Let's see what I can do with this. If anything, I don't care. That we sometimes heard this, that, you know, the different yogas, Treta Yoga, then it is the path, so to speak, the ways to self-realization is meditation. You don't care much about material development. You sit under a tree and you are just living very, very simple life in this world together, and also with the animals and the plants and everything beautiful, but very just close to nature and very much engaged in meditation. That contemplation, that inner, so that nothing else is needed. And then in Treta Yoga, then the Dharma, that's what you call it, huh? The Dharma for Treta Yoga is yagyas, ceremonial functions, big fire sacrifices where you offer things, and it may be you offer mantras, or you offer food, or you offer, but it's a way to make this spiritual center and foundation of the society upheld. You need the kind of more. Make it into ceremonial functions like that. And the explanation I heard is that it's because the spiritual, mental, intellectual sharpness, the clarity, satya means real, bright, clear. You know, the just as with everything here, after a while, this starts to wane a little and get older and get a little clouded. And we're talking about the consciousness of humans getting a little bit more onto the modes of nature, right? Mode of passion coming in from the original mode of clarity of goodness. Sattva, again sat. So then these societies are appearing that are, and you can find them on earth, yagic arenas. There are some in Beijing, there are of course South America, there are, yes, certainly in India. No buildings really, but you know, just maybe a big plain, and there's a fire place in the middle. You can see that they used to make fires, and you know, and the whole area is some kind of holy place in itself. And this is also what we read, that the great sages up there. Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapuloka there doing those things. I think especially Mahaloka there, Jhanaloka. And then as things get even more in the modes, this is established as buildings and religions, you know, these churches, and someone needs to manage the church, the money coming in, the money going out, the congregation, the people, man and woman power, how to use it, and there you got the pyramid. So then it's said that in this age of Kali Yuga, the Dharma, Yuga Dharma is none of those really. Meaning not even one of those old religious institutions like you find in the Christian church or the Jewish and whatever, this, you know, very often top-heavy religious institutions, that they are obsolete in this age. And what and why? Because they tend to, well, that's what I would say and how I understand it, they tend to really get infected by these material modes like that. So then I would say in this age, this can maybe go into the Dharma book. I will make a note about this after this. Maybe in the story too. So in this age, that's what we learn from our Prabhupada, Chaitanya, that it's go out in the street and just chant the names of God. Chant the glory of God together. That activity in itself and the togetherness for those who do that is just so positive in itself. So it's like a walking temple. It's beautiful. And there's nothing more really needed. And then some will come and say, no, it's just trying to threaten our institution here. Institution, you should serve the institution. You know, then when you hear that talk, then sure, if you agree with that, then that institution is for you. And even if you don't like such talk, you may choose to serve that institution anyway. But I don't really think that Srila Prabhupada created an institution in that sense, but a movement. It's something that I heard others also express that view. A movement, togetherness, friends being together, helping each other move forward. Where the organization serves us, rather than we serving an organization or institution. So yeah, somewhere, something there. we can write about and maybe even put in the story.